Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I love Lucy and she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. We have our quarrels, but then, oh, how we love making up again. Lucy kisses like no one can. She's my missus and I'm her man. And life is heaven, you see. 'Cause I love Lucy, yes, I love Lucy, and Lucy loves me.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. So, interesting fact this month, Mary Kay and Johnny was the first American situation comedy starring real-life married couple Mary Kay and Johnny Stearns. It was the first sitcom broadcast on network television in the United States. It originally aired live on the DuMont Television Network before moving to CBS, then NBC. It premiered 70 years ago, so it's the 70th anniversary of the television sitcom. So for eight decades, the television comedy has led ratings and honors, but from I Love Lucy to Modern Family, the comedy has evolved. But the concept has remained the same. And joining us tonight to talk about the history of the television sitcom is Wally Podrazik. He's an adjunct lecturer, and I got this wrong last time. It was UIC. And then also the author of Watching TV, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal book, which he's holding up to our people who are watching. Cameras. Yeah, and on WGNradio.com. And he's also very involved as a curator at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. What's going on, buddy?
Well, gain some extra time, and why not spend that extra time talking with you?
Isn't that right? Yeah, and comedy, and such a, something that spans generations.
Yeah, and the thing about comedy is, look, I can argue how important drama is and news is, and musical variety was breakthrough on radio and early TV, but comedy, situation comedy in particular, is the most identifiable form.
Yes.
I mean, people look and say, oh, I recognize that. That's familiar. Wait, that's me.
Yeah,
up
right,
there. And there's just this tremendous identification. And also because it's usually in shorter half-hour segments, it's easy to digest. There are some serial comedies, that is, multiple episode stories unfold
that you have to watch in order,
but not anywhere near as often as you see in drama.
No,
so it's like I'm here,
yeah,
and it's a rerun. I don't care. It's funny,
right? Exactly. Mary Kay and Johnny. So the show, I didn't even know the show existed.
Well, for a very good reason, because for all practical purposes, it doesn't.
Yeah,
for
you
us.
Know, there's one I think that I saw online that exists, not online, but exists at the Paley Center,
that's
I think, in New York,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And you sent me a link to this conversation with Mary Kay and Johnny that was done in an interview with the television archives, but, you know, obviously back then there was no intent. There were some kinescopes, which was when they would film the screen to air it on different coasts.
On different coasts, because there was no coast-to-coast cable, so the only way you could be national was to record your series. But they weren't filming them like I Love Lucy did.
Right, that was the groundbreaking.
In fact, if there's so many things that I Love Lucy innovated on, the number one was packaging the situation comedy in a way that could be played forever.
Groundbreaking in many ways.
In many ways, but that on the business side was absolutely brilliant.
Was Desi.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really his idea. I mean, he kind of was the second banana on that show, but as far as really even how television comedy is recorded today with multi-cameras and so forth, these were all his ideas.
And the striking thing about it is it brought Hollywood polish to those episodes. And if you watch an I Love Lucy episode, for instance, you say, oh, well, the dollar amounts are wrong or the fashion's a little off from what I'd be familiar with. But otherwise, they are pretty timeless.
Yeah, they are. Surprisingly.
And it's
some shows.
Others aren't.
But we talk about some of those shows even on the old time radio when I listen to them. Some of them, Jack Benny, for one, even though it's not timely, it's still timeless, the conversation.
Yes.
But you listen to a Fibber McGee and some of these other shows, and they're awfully dated.
It's
hard to connect to
a different sensibility.
Yeah.
And so getting back to Mary Kay and Johnny for a moment, one of the reasons that you rightly say, I didn't even heard of it, is because they weren't filmed in a format that allowed for multiple syndication runs, and they didn't have a big network exposure. They weren't the most important thing on TV, and they didn't play repeatedly over the decades.
Exactly.
And so even if they were the ones that a married couple, shared a bed together, had pregnancy involved in the series All American and Johnny, the fact is it doesn't matter because we didn't see the reruns
right.
of it.
Right, we didn't. We still don't. And we still don't even know what those shows look like.
For the most part, yeah.
Because even early television was so much about vaudevillian variety and sports. I mean, live sports.
And even if you think about radio comedy, and you mentioned Jack Benny, one of the things, it was radio comedy plus music. It was always let's have a band number and such. And the thing that TV did, when starting with I Love Lucy, really, and then continued on, was say, we're going to do mini comedy movies.
Yeah.
And that's what made TV such a wonderful bargain for the first generation of TV viewers. It's like, I can get that. I buy the set. Rest is free. Well,
exactly.
Except for the commercials.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about the showbiz angle of this, because those early television days were very connected to, yes, I'm a star in Hollywood, or yes, I'm an actor in the movies or whatever. And this series is kind of about my life, and I Love Lucy was one of those, about married couple Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball.
And Lucille Ball very much wanted to be in showbiz. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, she was a housewife. Yes, she got to see the Mertzes and the Ricardos in really good domestic situations. But the fact of the matter is, the reoccurring theme was, I want to be like my husband on the stage.
Right. But Jack Benny was showbiz. Burns and Gracie Allen. I mean, you talk about, they were one of the earliest television kind of comedies that was, or radio comedies that was
radio
on
comedies
in 29, I think, was maybe one of the first appearances on radio.
And George and Gracie, George Burns was, we talk about, whoa, look, we broke the fourth wall. Yeah, just like George Burns did all the time on the TV show.
Yes.
Very first episode was on a stage.
Yeah.
And he's talking to the audience. He's walking over the set breaks because, oh, I have to get to this scene.
Yeah.
And so he changes scenes. And all of it was, I'm very aware that I'm a showbiz person doing a television comedy about a showbiz person's domestic life. And that was back in the 50s.
And then he went to Dick Van Dyke behind the scenes, and it was really the story of your show of shows.
Let me tell you about my life, except let me have someone who has more hair in the lead.
Yeah. And then you had News Radio, you had Frasier that was on radio, you had 30 Rock that was behind the scenes. So it was showbiz related type of programs. I want to hit family coming up. We're talking to Wally Pedrazic about 70 years of television comedy. Believe it or not, 70 years ago this month, the first television comedy.
All right. Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like me, we had it made. Those were the days. And you knew where you were then. Girls were girls and men were men. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again.
So Wally, that was not the original theme.
There were two pilots.
Yeah. Done for All in the Family, yeah.
Right. And then the version that we got, and the main difference in each one was who played the kids.
Right, exactly.
But it was a family comedy that was topical.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's a whole different genre of television. I mean, you wanted to talk about edgy, what was happening today that was... It wasn't just, you know, Billy came home from school and you know, he's got to be at the baseball game and blah, 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 blah. This was about, you know, current issues in the news. I mean, kind of ripped from the headlines almost a little bit.
And the clever conceit there was that the premise was that Archie and Edith's daughter, Gloria, married a liberal. Mm-hmm. And because they had, money was tight, they were sharing the house.
Yeah.
And so you had the natural opportunities for two generational views to clash constantly.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And so that was the touchstone. And the thing I love about All in the Family is that it was based on a British program called Till Death Us Do Part. Same premise. And what I love about it is the couple that stayed together until death was Archie and Edith.
Oh, yeah.
And Archie,
on the show, actually.
On the show. And Archie grew grudgingly, inch by inch, but it was more effective to see him have these moments of insight and say, oh, I don't want the Ku Klux Klan putting a burning cross on my daughter and sons when they move to her house next door.
Yeah.
And so he takes them on. And he knows his people. That is, he knows this mental state and how he could threaten them. And a few episodes before the one I'm about to describe, he had had, I think it was a gallbladder operation, and so he needed blood, and so he got black blood. That is, the donor was black. And so he presses their prejudice buttons, and he says, you know what that makes me? That makes me a black, and that means that I can call up all my brothers and kick your butt, so you better stop doing that.
Yeah.
And it worked because you knew that he knew what they thought.
Yeah.
He knew how he had grown,
and
he knew how important this was. And all of that comes to play in a comic setting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For all those years. Exactly. You talk about a couple other shows, too, that were very topical. MASH, and I talked to Alan Alda a few weeks ago about this, and I knew this was going to be a topic of contention for him, but I said, in the beginning, MASH, even though all the way around for those 11 seasons, it was about war. You always got back to the war. Even though there was funny moments in it, you got back to the war. But after those first three seasons with McLean Stevenson and Wayne Rogers when they were there, it was more about the funny. It was those last 7-8 seasons that it got way too serious.
It was a dramedy.
It became a dramedy, and it became very political in some sense.
Oh, yeah.
And when I said that to Alan, and I've heard him in interviews talk about this, he's like, oh, I don't think that's true. It's clearly true that that's where that series went.
But that I think you correctly put the dividing line in that it's actually two series.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And that's one of the reasons I think that it lasted that long.
Yeah.
Is you had that first season, the first three seasons, which was much closer to Madcap Doctors on the Warfront, with very serious tones even in the first season.
Yeah.
But then it became, okay, we're a little more grounded. We have more serious a comic actor with Harry Morgan taking the McLean Stevenson role of the commander.
Right.
A different character, but same function. And now we're starting to explore other issues. And so it could be very topical, very symbolic, and frankly, very creative.
Absolutely.
I mean, you had Twilight Zone type fantasy episodes that played during that second era of MASH.
Sure, absolutely.
But every once in a while, even they would be self-conscious. You can see in the last couple of seasons, you say, they're trying really hard to do a pure funny one.
Yeah,
BJ got the reputation of being a practical joker. So one entire episode was built around the ultimate practical joke that he could play on Hawkeye.
But it was a different level of
it
comedy.
It was definitely different. It was not who gets the long johns.
Yeah, right.
Of the first couple seasons.
Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. You got some comments about MASH and being a comedy.
I don't get it. Again, I told your screener lost a great uncle to it, and my dad loved the show, watched the show. I didn't get it. I didn't see how anybody could say, hey, let's make a comedy about a war.
Oh, well, let's not even talk about MASH being a comedy about a war. Let's talk about Hogan's Heroes. Yeah, sure. Talk about a prisoner of war camp.
Right, all of them. How? Why? Why would you make? Hey, let's make a comedy about this. I didn't get it. Again, Hogan's Heroes. My dad was a huge fan.
Was...
I didn't get it. I was like, really? Because again, I was 11, 10, and you know, I knew enough about the Nazis that they weren't funny. They, you know, the guy that said, I know nothing. I know. Come on, really? That's not the way they were.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hey, that's not funny.
Well, they made it. They made it funny, which wasn't a funny situation. Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Again, really. So, like I said, I'm a fan, a huge fan of Band of Brothers on the HBO show.
Oh, same, same thing. Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's true. That's like, you know, I mean, not true, or it's close to the truth. You know, about a war. And then you got Hogan's Heroes, and like you said, MASH, and all these, and they're making fun of this. It's not. There was nobody in this war that said, "Hey, dude, do you see what Klaus just did?"
Yeah, Wally. You know?
Just want to jump in with two things. One thing to remember about Hogan's Heroes is it was as much a nod to The Great Escape, Stalag 17, stuff like that, where that was absurd and that wasn't meant as a comedy, but say, come on, how could they have pulled all that off?
It was made as a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It was made as a comedy.
Yeah.
I mean,
And again,
was too. I mean, but
the movie. Yeah. The movie
The other thing, and I think it's a very significant point about, you say your dad presumably has war experience or closer to it than.
No, he did not. He lucked out. He was, National Guard. His brother, however, did go to Vietnam and did kill plenty of people and did die of cancer. I'm not saying it was from that gas that they had in the bombs, but you know, I'm pretty sure.
No,
he
I
was.
Get your point though.
He was affected. I mean, it's not a funny topic. I don't get it. That's what I'm saying. Is that, man? It really makes me sick that Hollywood makes huge dollars off these wars, man, and they made it into comedies. It just sickens me. You know?
Well, I get your point. I get your point that it's tough to be a comedy, Wally. You want to?
But again, I go back to if you have people that experienced it, they see nuances that maybe we who weren't there don't.
That's a good point.
And also, frankly, the war setting. Allows for extremes of emotion.
Yeah.
It's a thin line between love and hate. It's a thin line between death and the only way to survive death is laughter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of spoofing, obviously, in television as well. All right, we're going to go to the news. It is 2:32, by the way. Daylight saving time ended, so it's 2:32 standard time at this point. We'll talk about family comedies in the workplace. Young adult centered comedies. We're going to do that. And if you want to join in the conversation, 312-981-7200, call or text.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Those nights when you've got no lights, the check is in the mail, and your little angel hung the cat up by its tail.
All right, so we're talking about the 70th anniversary of the television sitcom, and this is like the extended version of the Cheers theme, like a verse you never hear, obviously, that I think aired in like the last episode or something of that nature. But we're talking about the 70th anniversary of the television sitcom, and we're going to talk a little bit about the workplace. Shows that aired, and some of them cross across different things. You know, Dick Van Dyke was in The Workplace, but the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Domestic as well. So.
Domestic as well, exactly. Mary Tyler Moore Show. It was very focused on the office space.
Oh, yes. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore Show would be one that you use as an example of the workplace being the surrogate family.
Yeah.
Basically, she's an independent woman on her own. She's going to make it after all when she comes to town and advances in business. But the fact is that she drew as her family the people at the workplace.
Yeah, the Windsor family, yeah.
And Cheers actually was the same. They have family stories, but mostly Everything took place in that workplace family.
Very odd when you would see a scene outside of the bar.
Yeah. And of course, really odd when you realize that the bar owner, Ted Danson, playing Sam Malone, is, of course, a reformed recovering alcoholic who's running a bar.
Yeah, right.
And so that sets up this tension.
It's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. It's not. Barney Miller, you talk about Parks and Recreation. Andy Griffith, you know, I didn't even think about that from a workplace perspective. It totally is.
Yeah, because that's where all the focus is. Yes, there's great family stories in there. And that's probably what makes series like Andy Griffith or Dick Van Dyke in particular so strong, is that you have those two sides of life. Because we are not all work and we are not all family. We have that balance that we have to face. And Andy Griffith, the way it is best appreciated is a relaxed visit with the Taylor family down the street.
Yeah.
But probably starting at Andy's office.
That's right. That's how every episode started, yeah.
And nothing really happens.
No. And I want to... digress a little bit to the rural comedies that were on.
Sure.
Even though it was the workplace, you know, Andy Griffith was probably the most sophisticated out of the group. But then you had the Beverly Hillbillies, which, by the way, was like the number one show for years.
And even in all-time ratings, individual episodes of the Beverly Hillbillies.
As a TV program, not a Super Bowl program.
Once you take away the Super Bowl.
Green Acres, Petticoat Junction, Mayberry RFD, and there was obviously that big rural purge, they called it, in the early 1970s that kind of shut all those off the air, and then all of a sudden came All in the Family and MASH and all these, you know, Bob Newhart, all these more obviously sophisticated shows.
And also it was perceived as skewing younger and also making the difference between urban and rural.
Yeah.
And guess what? Those are still issues that are out there even today.
Absolutely.
So the joy of rural comedy was usually the punchline of, and those city slickers don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Homespun humor, homespun insight
will
top them any day. And basically Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and the rest said, you know, no.
Yeah, right. And the Tiffany Network said, this is not Tiffany Network quality anymore.
Yes.
And then The Office, of course, from the workplace.
And that's going to something that's very much the weight that really is like my life.
Yeah. Yes. Very relatable in a lot of situations. Absolutely.
In Parks and Rec, it's not strictly The Office, but it is insensibility in the sense of, yeah, I've seen things like that. And you see the same now with the big store, and I just blanked on the name of the series. I think it's The Big Store, that basically say everybody forms relationships, friend relationships in the office setting, which they might take off site.
Which is true. Which is true. I've done that here. I do that in my office as well.
Yeah.
We will talk family in just a little bit, but there's some other ones. Young adult, obviously, which kind of comes out of the workplace too. You think about the earliest of the young adult was probably That Girl in the 1960s. I mean, everything was a little more family-centric and showbiz in the 50s. But That Girl kind of broke that rule about a single woman on her own.
Exactly. And you identified with, there was still this little bit, well, someday she really should marry that good-looking guy. But the fact of the matter is she was an independent.
So was Mary Tyler Moore.
Exactly.
And she wasn't divorced. It was a broken engagement because they were afraid people were going to think she was divorced from Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. I mean, what happened to Rob?
Different world.
But that shows how people conflate all of TV into one big world. Other combination workplace and young adult. I mean, you have to put Friends and Seinfeld in that young adult.
Friends was a really, you know, people might say, maybe it wasn't really a groundbreaking show, but as far as young adult and centered in their lives for that long a time, it really was.
And that surprisingly still wears well. Yeah. You mentioned I teach at UIC. That's one of those, we know Friends.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's streaming, we're watching it, and come on, who wouldn't as a young person, want a premise which has them living in this great apartment with no obvious source of income,
yeah,
with plenty of time.
Big apartment, by the way. Yeah,
a
New
big
York,
apartment.
In New York, yeah.
With plenty of time to interact with each other and have family crisis, have all that. But basically, it's them hanging out and growing up together.
And Will and Grace, that 70s show, Big Bang Theory, How I Met Your Mother, all, you know, young, kind of centered conversations. Also, you know, female centered. A lot of those shows, you know, back in the day, I would say Rhoda was one of those probably early shows, spinning off of Mary Tyler Moore. And then Murphy Brown, Laverne and Shirley. I guess you could put Lucy and Ethel in there in episodes.
Yes.
And designing.
Because Lucy was about Lucy and the people around her.
Yeah.
But you have shows like The Golden Girls and Designing Women and Laverne and Shirley, as you mentioned, which are, these are young women who are sort of apart from the era that they're being set in, Laverne and Shirley in particular.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it didn't happen, but it wasn't celebrated in that same way. It was celebrated only with the intervention of more than a decade.
And Golden Girls, still today in syndication, and Camille, I'm going to ask this question of you. In college, did you watch The Golden Girls? I mean, did you ever watch any of these shows?
Never watched Golden Girls. I did have a friend who was obsessed with it, though.
Yeah,
like,
but
he loved it.
It was okay.
Yeah,
but it was a college thing too. I mean, a lot of people found it in the last decade. In school, but you can't miss it on cable and stuff. I mean,
and that goes back to almost our opening point of this whole discussion, which is because you have these syndicated reruns, because you have these streaming opportunities, things which you have no business being a fan of because you're the wrong age or the wrong decade are your contemporary offerings.
Yep.
And you could probably get a group of young people now that could quote Seinfeld left and right, quote Friends left and right. Just say, pivot!
Yeah, right, exactly.
And you know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That was the Friends reference.
There was a lot of cutting-edge shows, like The Monkees was very cutting-edge with the music videos.
Yeah,
and the
for that time, it was like, there's no story.
No.
It's music and skits in between.
And silliness, yeah.
And silliness. And yeah, that was an innovation.
To Crazy Ex-Girlfriend today, which you almost
same type of thing, where that's an hour. And that has the advantage, but actually following the Monkees' path of, let's just showcase the videos outside of the story itself. You don't need to follow the story.
Diversity, you know, and we haven't even gotten to family yet, but diversity has played, obviously, a role in the sitcom. The Cosby Show, and you can't discount, you know, even though there's all this stuff coming with Bill Cosby, that is such a groundbreaking series in the 1980s. But you also had the Jeffersons. You had My Wife and Kids, George Lopez, off the Boat, Everybody Hates Chris. Bernie Mac was a phenomenal series. But, you know, we've kept it, you know, I think pretty respectful. There's just not enough of them.
Yeah,
Blackish. And, you know.
Yeah, and example. Actually, yeah. A Blackish ties in. One of the performers from Bernie Mac was in Blackish as the lead, and Blackish also has been taking on issues in its sitcom setting as well. But the most important thing is, we are going to have an image that is celebrating successful Black families. I mean, that's what Cosby did. That's what My Wife and Kids did. That's what Bernie Mac did. It's not like, this isn't ghetto life, friends. And in fact, George Jefferson did the same thing. It's like, I'm more successful than Archie Bunker.
Right.
I'm the one
that's
who
exactly
made it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so these are images that are as important as, say, a Will and Grace just taking gay life as a matter of fact. This was, by the way, we have some successful people here.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we now have situation comedy complications, but they're from our point of view.
We've got George on the line. George, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question for Wally?
Wally, George, on Western Avenue in Park Ridge,
okay,
on the Forest Preserve. We grew up together. Do you happen to remember me?
You have to give me a last name.
I prefer not to over here.
Okay, but anyway, yes. Yeah, what's going on, George?
I recognize the voice, though.
All righty. No, I just wanted to say, you know, I really admire your success, seeing you on Chicago Tonight, you and Grising and that. I just thought I'd take this opportunity.
That's cool.
I woke up for some milk and cookies. I don't know why in the middle of the night.
That's because you're all screwed up with the time.
Yeah, you got an extra hour for some snacks. I like that, George. Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Anyway, just for you folks in Radio Land, Wally was the nicest kid in the neighborhood.
That's cool. What a nice thing to say. What a nice thing.
He really was. You know, everyone liked Wally.
Thank you so much.
God bless you, man, and thanks. Thank the good Lord for all your success.
Oh, very cool. Thank you, George. Thanks for the call. Dave Player, Wally Podrazik, talking about the 70th anniversary of the television sitcom, and we've left the best for last, which is Family. Leave It to Beaver. That was probably one of the first big ones, and it's turning 60 this year. It's turning 60 because I saw the Beav on the Today Show.
Oh my Lord!
He was only in his 70s. He was a young kid, right, when he started.
And in fact, that was one of the attractions for the kid audience at that time.
Yeah,
which was
instead of a kiddie show, it was
there's a kid I can identify with. There are situations that I can identify with. There's duplicitous. Peers, friends, and of course the idealized suburban family setting. I mean, if you're going to dream about how would you like to grow up, that was not the honeymooners set.
No,
that was a place with an understanding dad and mom and a decent family support across the board.
Yeah,
and you know that was one reason that situation comedy loves families, because we keep coming back to, if you want to take a quick jump, then we'll fill in between.
Yeah.
It's like one of the reasons Modern Family has been so consistently successful. That is, you see three different takes on what we consider to be family, but it's all part of a big family.
Right.
And what makes it hum is the credibility of the kids. And when you say kids, you mean the kids of the pater, and then their own kids. And it's just funny because you come to that, you have that recognition factor.
Yeah,
you have
true.
That. Oh my goodness, they've got mom and dad's number. Oh my gosh, right.
Yeah, they
and
do.
Just
yeah,
the
they
opposite.
Do.
Where yeah. oh, they, I know what you're doing.
Yeah,
I know what
just
you're
the
doing.
Opposite in the early days. Absolutely. Yeah. Ozzie and Harriet. All family on and off the screen.
My goodness. I mean, the entire family. My favorite part of the history of Ozzie and Harriet is watching the opening credits where they introduce the bigger and bigger and bigger family. Because as you married into the Nelsons, you married into the on-screen TV series as well.
Family Affair, The Brady Bunch, Happy Days. As I said, that's one of the shows that I grew up with.
And how about Eight is Enough? I forgot about that one.
And that is an hour-long comedy.
Dramedy.
That would be in that same spirit of a lot of interactions.
Mm-hmm. But the shows that I would say kind of defined that time on television, The Brady Bunch was so 60s. Happy Days was 70s about the 50s.
Right.
And then in the 80s, you had a show about the 60s with the Wonder Years. But I think that's what makes those shows so timeless. Intentionally, Happy Days and Wonder Years were about flashback
eras.
Right,
another era, yeah.
But when you watch The Brady Bunch, it almost seems very similar to me that it's a show about the 60s and 70s, right?
Yeah, and it's a loving look back. Oh, excuse me, this is unfolding in real time then.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had, obviously the Everybody Loves Raymond. I mean, there was just, as the comedies just kind of evolved, and Roseanne, and I know you kind of had that under female-centered. It could be also listed under topical.
Oh, most definitely.
And I am really,
it's also family.
I will tell you, this is a show that if I'm flipping around channels and there's nothing else on, I'll still stop and watch it. And I'm excited that ABC's brought it back. I'm very curious to see. I saw pictures of them doing a table read on the set, and they still had the set. And some of it they had to rebuild, but some of it was just slid away, just like Seinfeld when they did the Curb Your Enthusiasm thing when they had the reunion. But, go ahead.
And I was just saying, for Roseanne, I believe they've said, okay, yeah, we kind of screwed up in the last season, so that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And we're just going to pick up with what you loved about Roseanne.
That's why Seinfeld had a reunion on Curb Your Enthusiasm and tried to kill that whole last episode.
Yeah.
But you talk about Roseanne being, the real relatable family, working family. That's kind of what The Middle is on ABC.
Yes, I mean, The Middle is one of those overlooked series with Patricia Heaton. And it's sort of like a cross between Malcolm in the Middle and your traditional situation comedy family, but a strong female center in it. And that's what we're seeing more and more is attempts, maybe it's a reflection of more availability and more opportunities for some female writers and all to come in and say, no, this is what we're going to bring to the table.
Sure.
And these are concerns that it wouldn't have occurred to you guys, but we're gonna pursue that in our storytelling.
And then, of course, animated. Now, you know, we look at the sitcom, and The Simpsons is considered a sitcom. And one of the longest running, I think, in television. Was it 20, 30? What is it, 30 years?
I frankly lose track because it's been ticking off. It's been ticking off the ways you measure longest running.
Yeah.
It's not just number of seasons, but number of episodes, number of comedy episodes. So it's not going to ever pass 60 minutes or meet the press, but in terms of scripted series, it's pretty much knocked down every barrier.
I've got two other texters. 708 says, how about My Three Sons? Obviously, and about the single dad as well, which there was a lot of that in the 60s with Family Affair and stuff. Last Man Standing, which was one of the most recent sitcoms with Tim Allen. Home Improvement, I guess you could also say.
Oh, yeah, you definitely put Home Improvement as a, what do you call it, traditional family-centric comedy, dad, mom, and kids growing up.
But animated, first one was The Flintstones. It was a prime-time TV series. It was kind of The Honeymooners, but it was also, they had a family. Eventually,
well, then
they, had a
they made it a family by having kids introduced. Imagine, there was controversy if Lucille Ball was pregnant, but no problem if Wilma Flintstone Stone is pregnant.
I know, right? I know, it's so funny. Family Guy, of course, family series, but completely also topical and edgy at the same time.
Yes.
King of the Hill, same thing. And of course, you have Bob's Burgers and Rick and Morty, which I found.
Well, the reason I mentioned Rick and Morty, that's contemporary. That's new. I mentioned teaching college students, and they like that. Well, no, they pointed out as, man, this is edgy. But the reason I brought this in, almost taking it absolute full circle, is that it started with its creators trying to sort of troll and tweak Universal. It was going to be their version, unofficial, of the characters in Back to the Future. Doc and Marty traveling through all sorts of space and time. Well, this is our take. Sue us and give us a lot of publicity.
Yeah, that's exactly what they've done there. I just want to mention, so for a while I was... lecturing at Marquette, and we were talking. The two subjects I always spoke about was television advertising and local television. But we started getting into the different decades and even how television commercials we related to. And I remember playing the Kool-Aid commercial of the guy running through the wall. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kool-Aid, hey, Kool-Aid, oh, yeah, and he'd run through the wall. And these kids and their kids, you know, got a big kick out of it, and they seemed very familiar with it to me. And I didn't understand why in 2010, 12, whatever it was, that they knew this guy. And it was through Family Guy. Mm-hmm. It was all through a different generation because we all know Seth MacFarlane grew up when we grew up in the 60s or 70s or whatever. And the Kool-Aid guy was something he grew up with, and he threw it in his series, and it made it relatable for a different generation.
And you see that often in animation where I've seen kids look and see a scene and go, oh, wait, that I Love Lucy candy scene? Oh, that comes before the series I know it from?
Yeah, exactly. It's very funny, very funny. Always a pleasure having you in here, Wally. And again, your book, which is really the definitive storytelling of the history of television, all these great shows, and it's just such a great, it's like an encyclopedia, I think.
Encyclopedia suggests, no, I consider it a collection of articles that are fun to read.
They just are. And it's one of those books that I just pick up and just open it anywhere and find something fascinating there. And it's watching TV, and it's eight decades
of American television.
Yeah, and you can find it on Amazon. And where do we find you, Wally?
You find me at you can go to MediaWally.com or go directly to WatchingTV.org.
There you go. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Thank you.